Hello everyone, my name is Phil Blancato and I am CEO and President of Latimer Thalmann Asset Management, a division of Advisor Group. Today is already June the 3rd. Hopefully where you're at it's nice and warm and you're beginning to enjoy the summer weather. I live in New Jersey and work in New York City, and so far we've had a day or two where it's been nice, but still not summer yet as we're waiting for that. As you know, we've talked about in the past, temperature affects the virus. Higher humidity, have more heat, makes the droplets less, gives it less ability to travel, hence lower infection rates. So warm weather because it's fun, and certainly warm weather because it helps us all. Well, here we are another week. No doubt this has been a week that makes us pause about so many things in our life. The economics of our world, the politics of the world, and the pain and suffering of events that certainly are not something we can easily look past. While I'm not a political person and won't go into the tragic events in Minneapolis, it is sad to say that we're having to deal with not only the personal fallout, but a portion of being an economic fallout, no doubt. And as the economy began to reopen, this was yet another speed bump. We need a hurdle to try and get past the buildings that were either burnt down or looted. In New York City where I work, many of the buildings are boarded up with fear of something significant happening beyond what's already taken place. So let's hope that we can find a resolution, most importantly on a personal front, but also on an economic front as well. To get into some of the data, the virus continues to grow, but certainly, as we've talked about in the past, the two unknowns of the market we now clearly understand. The first thing we needed to know is who gets the virus, how quickly does it spread, who can we protect, and who does it affect the most? And that clearly now is well understood. When we think about the second unknown as to can we reopen the economy and what will we get from the medical front to help us do that, that's well on its way as well. And on both fronts, there's reasons for optimism as we are opening up economically, and the stock market is reflecting that. With being today, if markets hold where they are today, we'll be down, can you believe it or not, just around 3 to 3.5% after today's close on the S&P 500. It's incredible how far we've come and how fast we've come. Not completely justified, by the way, but certainly a significant improvement. Quick update on the virus. Basically, 6.5 million people have now contracted the virus. When we think about the number of people who have gotten it, and more importantly, who is it affected mostly, we have come to realize that far and away, the most of the infections are around older folks. And I'm going to get into some of that data in a minute. As you know, I focus first and foremost on New York City and the New York area. And one of the nice things is that the new case infection rate and then the hospitalization rate are at the lows of any time since the virus began. The death rate is in the less than 50 per day, on its way down to less than 20 today, and hopefully on its way down to zero. New cases less than most days, 100 to 150. And then also folks entering the hospital in double digits, in some cases even single digits. So real significant improvement. In fact, in all of New York State yesterday, there was only 142 new cases. Let's keep in mind that in that scenario, we are doubling or in some cases tripling the amount of testing that's going on, and yet the number of active cases is coming down. So that's a quite spectacular event. When you look overseas at places like Italy and Germany and other Western European countries, what we're finding now is all those countries are in a negative rate. Very exciting. Not only is their new daily case rate, most countries already at or near zero, the number of people getting sick is significantly less. So more importantly, their total case count or their active case count is now below zero. So they're in what we call negative territory. In fact, the United States also dipped into negative territory twice last week and already three times out of the last 4 days. So we're seeing more people recovering than getting sick, bringing our total number of infection down. And while we are seeing some states with a modest spike here and there, let's remember that be careful of the percentages. While there is a bit of a spike here and there, a few of the states, generally it's from the newest lows. So it's not like we're going from 1,000 to 2,000 people per day in some states. We're going from maybe 15 or 20 people to 20 or 30 people. So percentage-wise, it might look like a lot, but actual people, it's not. When we get into the data of the fatality, this is a critical point. We now understand that 87%, for example, in New York City, of the people passed away had an underlying condition going into this. So in other words, they had some issue ahead of time. That's significant. In fact, when you look at the number of total deaths, which are over almost 17,000 in New York City, 102 of them had no underlying condition. Critical when we start to analyze who do we need to most protect when we continue to reopen the economy. When you look at a place like Italy, Italy had over 32,000 deaths, 230,000 cases. 96% of those cases those fatalities had pre-existing conditions. 68% had high blood pressure, 30% had diabetes, 28% suffered from heart disease, and actually 60% of them had all three underlying illnesses, 21% had two of the underlying illnesses, 15% had one. As of May 25th, 1.1% of the virus fatalities had been under the age of 50 years old. More than 57% were over the age of 80. So clearly we now know who has the most or most dire impact from the virus. When you move to the United States, just recently there's been a number of reports out about our impact on nursing homes and how we needed to do a better job of protecting them. And in fact, when you look at some of the earliest tallies, the most conservative number of the 106,000 people that have passed away in the United States is 26,000 of them were in nursing homes. But a second review, because that number did not include long-term care facilities or people who went to the hospital from a nursing home, pushes the number to over 50,000, potentially as much as 60,000. And in fact, in the top 10 states that had the greatest number of deaths, anywhere from 50 to 75%, were in nursing homes. So obviously, we need to be very careful about how we protect the people who are most susceptible. And that's the most important part of how we open up the economy. How can we do so without increasing the number of people who are getting sick? Taken a different way, there's been a lot of talk about whether or not antibodies would matter, meaning do more people actually have the disease than we realize, and do they have antibodies from it? And yes, in some places like New York, where it could be as high as 20%, or one in five people in New York City have had the virus, or in New York City, the greater New York area, one in seven, the reality is, as we watch for the herd immunity, it's really not out there just yet. Because when you look around the globe, places like Miami-Dade, Florida, only 6% have the antibodies. Or Belgium only has 4.3%. Spain, 5%. Wuhan, China, 10%. So that's still a relatively small percentage of the population. And yet, as of now, we're just not seeing a second wave anywhere in the world, except for a few very small African countries which never had a large virus count to start. And the way we determine a second wave is that the country would have had to have a rapid rise in cases, have it come down, become sustained, and then rise again. And we're really not seeing that. We're not seeing a rapid rise anywhere. And the reason being is whether it's weather and humidity, which help out. Our ability to be smart about this. Wearing a mask can reduce your rate of infection by almost 50%. We've come to realize that our mobility is actually a good thing, moving around, because in a recent study done by Dr. John White, who is the chief medical officer for WebMD and studying the CDC data, they came to the conclusion that you have a 10 times more likelihood of getting disease indoors than you do outdoors. And in fact, to go one further, per the CDC, the disease really isn't spread on surfaces. I know so many of us are wiping down our shopping bags and be careful of a box we get from Amazon. Not the case. The disease doesn't really survive very well on paper or on plastics. By and large, we're getting this by inhaling it through our nose. You can get it by touching your face and then inhaling it off your face. So this really is a respiratory disease. And in fact, if we treat it that way, by being careful about cleaning our hands and protecting our face, we can significantly reduce the spread, adding to that the social distancing aspect of it. So the herd mentality isn't really what's important here. It's a matter of making sure we continue to control the disease, especially at a time when just evaporation is helping us out quite a bit. As we watch states that reopen, and there are a few like Arkansas, Washington, and West Virginia that saw a minor tick up. But for example, West Virginia, since the inception of this, has only had 2,000 cases. So being up 20 cases isn't really not a big deal. Certainly worth watching, but not significant, not hundreds of people, not widespread. Add to that, remember the Memorial Day weekend had numerous people that were concerned about gathering together and celebrating the beginning of summer. Well, here we are about 2 weeks later, and remember, 90% of the time you'll show severe symptoms within 5 days, 100% of the time within 6 days. It usually is a 14-day incubation period to rid yourself of the disease. And here we are nearly 14 days later, and in fact, we just haven't seen a spike in places like the Ozarks in Missouri, where there was so much concern about folks gathering together. So when we compare the data in Italy to compare the data in the United States, there's a very similar way to look at this. When looking at the U.S. population distribution by age group for all employed per people, the Bureau of Labor Statistics estimates that 76% of our workforce is under the age of 54. That's very important because 54, 55 and higher is when the mortality risk begins to spike. So, for example, as we talked a bit in the past, for those below the age of 55 with no pre-existing conditions, the likelihood of death is 0.002, or one death per 45,000. Below the age 25, it's one death per 1.2 million. Now, certainly every death matters, but when it comes to reopening the economy, we realize that if the bulk of our workforce is under the age of 54, and those people are not nearly as impacted by the disease as, say, in some cases, just crossing the street, then we can reopen the economy by focusing on those who are most affected. Conversely, the CDC says that those over the age of 65 are 22 times more likely to die of COVID versus those who are under 55. Or put a different way, hospitalization rates for those over 65 are 600% higher than those between 18 and 49. So when you think about this, it's really pretty clear who we need to protect. And even in Italy, with 50% of the people who died were over the age of 80 years old. Add to that, when we look at our current hospital count across the United States right now, emergency room hospitalization rates, or the number of beds available, is under 10% on average. The number of hospital beds available is under 50% on average. So we have the room if, in fact, we get a minor second spike. That is no longer the pressure on the hospitals, which was so much of the concern going into this. So now we know who gets it. Now we know who we need to protect. Now we know who we can let go back to work. We also know that we need to still be careful, wash our hands, don't touch our face, and we can wear a mask and really reduce the spread of this thing and be prepared for what's going to happen here in the coming months, considering that there could potentially be a second wave. And speaking about a second wave, there are two doctors in Italy who came out to say that they're, after studying the significant number of tests that they've been administering in Milan, Italy, over the past month, really 2 weeks, what they're realizing is the potency of the virus has changed, that the swabs they're taking are not showing as nearly the same potency as the initial folks who got the virus, meaning as the virus spread from person to person, it's having a much less of an impact on overall the potential to get you sick. So in other words, the virus could be potentially weakening. Now, this is early, and there's been a lot of backlash on this, as whether or not this is real or not, but it really is something to consider as to whether or not this virus, like so many other viruses, that over time weaken. If you remember, I mentioned the video by Dr. Michael Price from Cornell Wheel. He was talking to his family about what they should do to stay safe. And in his video, he mentioned how viruses traditionally weaken over time as we build immunities, and they have more difficulty transferring from one person to the next. One last point on the virus spread. The idea of going negative is not just a phenomenon in Western Europe. We as a country should be clearly negative next week. The only area in the world that will be positive population, positive growth from a death count and from an overall spread count right now looks like it's Brazil. Even Russia has been able to stem the number of new cases and begin to reduce their overall impact by having a drug available that's helping them get people out of the hospital. Interestingly enough, Russia has partnered with a company that originally was out of Japan, where what they did was they found an antiviral. And you've heard me talk a little bit about antivirals over time, that antivirals are a potential opportunity for us to get people better who get sick really quickly. Well, they have a partnership with a Japanese company, and as of early indications, in the 24-hour period, they're able to get people out of the hospital based on this antiviral. So that's really exciting news that there are just yet another opportunity for us to improve the overall health and quality based on new drugs coming to the marketplace. It really is kind of interesting that not a country we've talked about in this format has come to it. The name of the drug is Favipivir. Sorry, it's a little hard to pronounce. and they partnered with a Japanese company out of Fuji Film Holdings with the original jug. It's repurposing of an existing gold called Avigan. Let's hope that that works. Just like us, they're on the forefront of trying to find new medical treatments that can help along the way. All right, so that's quite a bit on where we're at from the spread. The next thing I want to talk a little bit about is where we are from a vaccine. And I know we spend so much time talking about the potential here, and I just thought I'd give a few updates on vaccine, and maybe a little bit on where we're opening up across the country and across the world. On the vaccine front, there are two new improvements from Chinese firms. One of them is a CanSino Biologics. They have got their results back from the first 105 vaccinated adults, and it turns out, as of now, all 108 tested to show improvement in their ability to create T cells, or the cells that fight the virus. So in other words, get them better in a quicker way using an antiviral, which basically would be a sort of not quite a vaccine, but get people better in the same way a therapeutic would. Sinopharma is from the Wuhan province where they all began, and they've come to market with a vaccine and began inoculating people and hope to have results by the fall. So real movements there out of China. But as I mentioned in the past, it would be best if we can come up with our own vaccine here in the United States. So Moderna, which is the big partner with the federal government, continues to move along. Remember, of the first 48 people they tested, 8 of them had exceptional results, and the other 40 had positive results. So now they're inoculating another 600 people. Add to that that their partner, who's going to create the vaccine for them, is going into full production, where in the next 4 to 5 weeks they will significantly ramp up production to have maybe hundreds of millions, if not a billion, vials ready by the fall. They're that confident that their antiviral would work. In fact, over the weekend, Dr. Fauci, who has been at the center of so much of this for all of us, came out and said he is very optimistic about their partnership with Moderna, that he thinks it is going to be able to bring a vaccine to market, and thinks we could have something in place, especially for those who need it the most. He's also noticing two things, which I thought were very interesting. First off, that the body is making a great response to the coronavirus. In fact, optimistic we can naturally fend off the infection. It sounded very similar to what they're finding in Italy, that the body is able to fend off the infection, especially if you're not vulnerable, and build an immunity to it. And then secondly, that if we do have a vaccine, we would give it to healthcare workers, frontline workers, but most importantly, the most vulnerable, who are elderly people with underlying conditions, diabetes, high blood pressure, and obesity. So a very similar narrative, a very optimistic Dr. Fauci in this article, and believes that a combination of drugs will help us get through this. By the way, one of the new drugs that's out there I find very interesting, beyond what Moderna is doing, is, believe it or not, using existing heart medications for high blood pressure. It turns out, initially that was thought to be a concern. Actually, after doing more studies, it turns out blood pressure medication can help make it difficult for the virus to attach to our blood cells. So in other words, by using blood pressure medications, it will not only thin out the blood, because it is a disease that can cause clotting, but beyond that, it actually makes the cell surface more difficult for the virus to attach to, based on a blocker like for high blood pressure. Very interesting. Another advancement is at-home testing. One of the things we've talked a lot about is that, would we want to test ourselves? I personally got a test, and I went to a CityMD to do it. I got a blood test. But now there's 3 different companies. Well, one of them is a university. Rutgers University is now testing 30,000 people a day using a saliva test. That can be done at home. Everwell and PrivyPath will both offer at-home tests. That's an exciting advancement in the ability to test ourselves. Going further on the vaccine front, Inovio's another company I mentioned, they're going into potentially phase 2/phase 3 trials at the same time. They want to be able to have the virus ready for us by September. They have a vaccine by September. Pfizer believes they'll have their vaccine ready by October 2020. These are all brand new since we last spoke. A convalescent plasma study came out to show that 76% of the people who got convalescent plasma improved. And in fact, in a study of 25 people, 19 improved significantly, and 11 got discharged from the hospital. So that's a big deal. The only problem is finding people with enough plasma, the right amount of plasma, right amount of antibodies that they can use, is a bit of a problem, but getting through that. Gilead Sciences is another company I've mentioned in the past, that Gilead is showing that as they use it more and more, if it has, it will have great effect in the first 5 days. If it doesn't help you in the first 5 days, more than likely it's not going to help you very much. But if you are very sick, it's showed a unique method of getting a neat drug to help you get better relatively quickly. The newest comer to the space is Eli Lilly. Eli Lilly believes they can have a therapeutic or an antiviral ready here by September as well, kind of jumping in front of Regeneron, another company we've talked about. What they did is took the antibodies from someone who's been, who has recovered, replicate those antibodies, turn it into an intravenous drip, which would then help you get better on a rapid basis. So really a significant improvement in our ability to get people better. Eli Lilly, obviously a very strong company in coming to market with an antiviral, would be a huge sign of success. All right, let's transition to a different topic. One of the things I talked a little bit about is the reopening, that second wave. Now, we do know that all 50 states are in the process of reopening. In fact, when you look at hair salon uses in the state of Georgia, it's now basically unchanged year over year. I personally would like to get a haircut, and I can finally get one in New Jersey on June 22nd, so that time is coming. Go one further, we're seeing restaurants open up around the country. We're seeing the second phase of reopening, which includes non-essential businesses happening around the country. And depending on where you live, I'm in a more restrictive area, but we're starting to see actual change. In Europe, they've gone so far as to opening up schools, because as of right now, it seems to be that children are simply not as susceptible to the virus. They don't have the receptors to catch the virus, and in fact, they turn out to be not spreaders either. Research by the European Union has continued to prove that they can open up schools, and they have seen no notable clusters whatsoever. Denmark, Austria, Norway, Finland, Singapore, Australia, and New Zealand have all opened up their schools, and none have seen an increase in infections at all. Where they've come to believe, based on the studying that they're doing, there is no issue with children. And that's a topic we've come to a few times, so I think that's exciting that we're getting there. And beyond that, as I mentioned already, the United States is well on the way as to reopening, and we'll monitor the second wave, but there just is not a second wave yet of anything of significance. So that's exciting that we're making our way down the path. Let's wrap up with a few more things, and then hopefully I'll try and tie this all together for you. From an economic standpoint, it's hard to believe the stock market's come as far and as fast as it can. We have roughly 41 million people that have applied for unemployment benefits. Recently, the Congressional Budget Office has come out and said the U.S. economy will not return to the same level of production until 2029. In fact, going so far as it looks like this has caused us a downturn in the overall U.S. economic output from a cumulative of $8 trillion that we'll lose over the next year. That's an incredible amount of money. Even with $3.3 trillion of stimulus, it goes to show you that this could have a prolonged and profound impact on the overall health of the economy. But I think it bears to note that there is some rays of sunshine. When we look at the economic data, there are some reasons to be optimistic. Remember going into this that we had a healthy economy going in. We had consumers in really strong shape. We had very low levels of unemployment. Well, the consumer's done some interesting things. Right now, the consumer's savings rate for every dollar you earn, how much you're spending, is right around 30 cents. That's the highest it's ever been. So the consumer has some, they're not spending a bunch, but we do see some sort of pent-up demand that should come to market as things ease up here. Today, ADP unemployment numbers came in. That's a preliminary estimate of unemployment, and the number was significantly better than expected. We were expecting a significant drop-off, and in fact, when it came right down to it, the unemployment data came in at a negative 2.7 million people, what was potentially going to be as many as 9 million people applying for unemployment. That's a pretty spectacular number. And in fact, when you really delve into the unemployment data, what we're realizing is, while it is bad, it's not 40 million people looking for jobs. The number's probably going to be more along the lines of 20 to 25% headline unemployment, with around 21 to 22 million people looking for work. Because what we're finding is, in places like California and Florida, we're already seeing actually millions of people go back to work. We're starting to see that improve quite significantly. We're knowing that by looking at Google mobility, where people are going each day, where they're going back to the original place of business, how they're applying for unemployment benefits, how some of those were rejected applications and either applied a second time, or because the way different states require unemployment benefits has inflated the number actually quite a bit. So the real number is not 40 million. The real number is going to be something like 20 to 25 million. And I don't mean to make light of it. It's still a significant number. But certainly it bodes that we are not in as bad a shape as we thought. However, it's probably not until 2021-22 that we'll see that number get back into single digits. It's going to take a long time for us to get these jobs back because there's an estimate right now that 40% of the jobs that were lost will not come back. And that is a significant number. That's a number to be greatly concerned about. And when you think about how long this could last. So a little optimism there, but still reasons to be concerned over the long term. Another ray of optimism, ISM non-manufacturing. So the stuff, all the things we spend money on besides manufactured goods was actually improved by about 4% month over month. It's still in contraction territory, but not as bad. So what we're starting to see is the data is telling us things are still bad, but not as bad as originally expected. Going one further, we're even seeing things like personal income go up a little bit. We're seeing inflation be basically flat. We saw pending home sales go down 21%, but new home sales actually improved month over month. So there's some reason to be optimistic on that. One kind of unusual point is that credit card spending, year-over-year credit card spending is still down 24%. But year-over-year debit card spending is actually up 63%. So kind of fascinating that people, because they're not using cash, are using their debit card and beginning to spend. And in fact, when we look at places like Georgia and California and Florida, where we're opening processes ahead of us, Arizona, Florida, we're watching them spend their spending rates, whether it's hair salons that are basically even year-over-year. But for kind of a fun comparison, when I look at Georgia versus New Jersey, restaurant usage is still down 21% month over month in Georgia. However, it's down 50% month over month in New Jersey. Versus, say, furniture purchasing is up 45% in Georgia month over month and still negative 2% in New Jersey. Maybe something that's a little bit more relevant might be home improvement. Things going to Home Depot, up 32% in Georgia and still only up 10% in New Jersey. So you're seeing states that are opening, adding back jobs, spending more money, less people applying for unemployment, and an overall improvement in the health of that local economy. That is really important as we try to open up the economy and get us going in the right direction. I don't want to sound too positive. I mean, there's still a lot of reasons to be concerned. The unemployment number, corporate earnings are going to be a negative 40% for the second quarter. You're looking at our GDP probably being around a negative 35% for the second quarter. We're still unsure of how much we can open, how much we can earn. Is it just back to some measure of earning, or is it actually going to improve? How many jobs will get put back? If we use the data, and in fact, the average number, average age in the retail sector of our economy, retail, leisure, tourism, so on, the average age, believe it or not, 85% of people that work in restaurants and hotels and bars are under the age of 55. Bodes to say that if those people go back to work, they're not going to get sick. But are we going to allow them to go back to work? So that's a real question mark to still be seen in whether or not the economy can improve. It's kind of a fun green shoot, we call that. TSA, the number of people going through the airports, was 268,000 went through security on Saturday, up 39% from 2 weeks ago and up 187% from April 11th. Gasoline is up 24% from a month ago. So we're beginning to see some reasons to be optimistic that the reopening is happening. And certainly there is a long way to go. The stock market has come really far, really fast. When you think about the stock market, as I mentioned earlier, we're probably only going to be down around 3% year-to-date after today. We were down 34% at one point. On an equally weighted basis, that means looking at every single stock the same way in the S&P 500, we're still going to be down around 9%. So probably your accounts are still down a bit. But no doubt we've come a long way. We're doing it without any corporate earnings. We're doing it with still a shuttered economy domestically and globally. We're doing it because the Federal Reserve has come to the rescue and supplied the economy with lots of money. I don't expect runaway inflation because demographically we're a different country today, much older. And right now we need this money to sustain ourselves. Down the road, inflation might be an issue, but it's not one for today. But to wrap up the call, I think there's lots of reasons to be optimistic and the market's reflecting that. Success on the medical front, no doubt about it. Success on lowering the virus, number of people affected, the death rate, no doubt, domestically and globally. Success at beginning to open up the economy, 25, 50, in some cases 75%, depending on where folks live. Add one further, the stock market has roared back because of that optimism. But remember, it still makes sense to be not overweight stocks just yet. We still need to see corporate earnings come back. We still need to see how much we can open. We still need to see if the consumer is going to spend. The consumer is the driver of our economy, and as of right now, the consumer is just spending enough to get by. Better than it was, but just enough. Wrap it all together, and I do think you have to look at the scenario and ask yourself, am I willing to get ultra-aggressive in my money, or should I just be in a neutral position, holding on, participating and protecting, not going full steam ahead? Our suggestion would be to participate and protect. Own equities, but let's have a little bonds, have some high-quality bonds in the portfolio. Maybe own a little cash right now. Keep yourself balanced and prepared for some real bad data to come, and maybe hopefully some good data to come. There's still plenty of unknowns that we need to figure out before we can get much more aggressive on the overall marketplace. No doubt there's still plenty more to come. And I will touch for a minute on the unfortunate riots. The protesters, there's no way not to support them. What happened in Minneapolis is a tragic event, and I can understand why so many people are so upset and protesting, and it's a great example of America that they're able to go out there and raise their voices. The riots are another ballgame. The folks who are out there looting stores and tearing down businesses, just in New York City I saw a family who owns two pharmacies both get overrun and everything in them destroyed. And that's terrible. That'll have an additional economic impact. Another speed bump for us to hurdle. As of right now, it's still a small amount. Let's hope it stays there. Certainly because the local businessman, the core of our economy, needs to thrive and survive. And we need to help them in any way we can to do that, because they're the ones that are going to keep the engine of the United States going. Bears watching, but it's tragic on both fronts. And for that, my heart goes out to the small business owner, the family in Minneapolis, and certainly all of us who are hurt by this event. I wrap up by saying be safe wherever you are, on all fronts. I hope you're somewhere safe from the virus and everything else that's going on. Wash your hands. Don't touch your face. Realize that things are getting a little bit better. And I think over the weeks and months to come, we'll enjoy watching the data come. Hopefully there won't be a second wave, but it certainly bears watching. And hopefully we'll have an antivirus soon. And hopefully we'll all get together and figure out the right way to get our country going in the right direction again. Thank you very much, everybody. Have a wonderful week, and I'll talk to you all hopefully next week. Bye-bye.